Dirt and Sprague.
I really do believe they're either going to live up to the hype or they're going to have a very mediocre season.
Starting your day with a big cup of dirt.
No, I'm not a bro.
And a little splash of Sprague.
Peekaboo.
Dirt and Sprague on the Fan Sports Network.
Hey, let's do this final hour. Dirt and Sprague here, Portland Sports Leader. 105.1 FM, The Fan, 1080 AM. The Odyssey app, live on YouTube. Woo, lots to get to.
God bless the beaver.
I know it gets hot, but like, it feels like when you put it to 68, it gets to 58. It's crazy.
Fantastic.
I cannot get an in-between temperature between what you want and what I want.
What's your number at over there right now, Swag? What's your
his,
number at?
His studio stays pretty warm.
Pretty warm?
Now, I can deal with it. Like, I know I get it heated when you get in.
Right.
I could deal with that. I come in here, it's chilly from a bathroom
I think
break.
The tough part of our thermostat
it's
right now.
69 right now here 16. In the control room.
Nice.
I love 69. We're at 67 right now. The tough part about it, second the nut hits my lip, I spit it out, is that when it's so cold when you get in, you have to turn up the heat at such a rapid pace that by the time the show starts, it's like the windows are fogged and it's muggy.
It?
I don't think you're breaking it. I think the system just breaks because it goes from being off and 60 degrees in here and you can see your breath to like, and then all of a sudden it's like now we're sweating at 6:58 a.m. So there's no slow gradual rise up. Oh. And if there was, I'd have a better time leaving it at 70.
Yeah.
We're an old married couple now.
One of our listeners asked about Adam Silver and the whole thing of Dundon Blazers stuff. And, you know, Silver just coming out at the start of that sale and saying, I might need a new arena, just in itself was problematic.
Yeah.
He could have said they need to figure out their arena situation.
Mm-hmm.
And just left it open-ended and said he said a whole new arena. I'm like, God, dude, why did you say that?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not going to let him off the hook in this instance. The city did not obviously welcome Tom Dundon in with open arms. Like, I know Keith Wilson did.
Mm-hmm.
I know Dan Ryan did.
Yes.
But not the entirety of the city council.
No.
Not everybody on board with the funding of this stuff.
And I do blame their frustration if we sat down in March and we talked.
They
the mayor said, here's a deal. Like,
real
all right, that sounds good. How about this? Okay, you need this. Okay, that sounds like a deal. Seems like we got a good one. And now it's like, what the hell happened?
We need Silver. I mean, it sucks to say this. You have to have Adam Silver step in and help this. I just can't. I still, no matter what anybody says publicly and retweets themselves a million times, I am at DEFCON 4. I will not believe we are being moved.
No.
But you also don't want to play the fun game of try me.
What happens if we don't pass the funding?
Because I just don't think Silver wants in any way that to happen.
No, I don't think he wants that stain on his legacy.
Like, I think at some point he's going to have to step in a little further. I know he commented on Sean Hyken's question. He needs to
find the support. You've got the mayor. The one guy that's got enough juice, I think, to get the dissenting city councilor's position is Ron Wyden. And so if Ron is on board with, no, this is in the best interest of the entire state and economy and revitalizing things, and he steps in to a closed-door private city council and said, you ever want me to endorse you for anything, you're going to do this.
Right.
That'll get it done.
Oh, and one of our listeners saying it's funny to me is the city council acting like $120 million over the span of the time frame is some crazy stupid amount to be negotiating like this. It's just like,
it's such a small
like
amount of money.
The private sector does bigger numbers than this all the time over that time frame.
When you see what the Portland city budget is on a yearly basis and you realize what we're haggling over. Oh, by the way, I love pointing this out. Do you know what the city just spent $60 million on? Not tents and needles. I've already done that joke.
Are we buying the needles from them now so we can tell
We spent $60 million renovating the Memorial Coliseum.
Well, that's a memorial, though.
Was anything debated? Was that a hot-button issue? Was that a debate? I know the owner of the Winterhawks. He's a great guy.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's a billionaire or not. Was that a handout to a multi-millionaire, maybe billionaire?
You can be worth $900 million and be okay, but
was that a controversial issue at all in any way? How many people in the city of Portland didn't even know that we spent the money to renovate the Memorial Coliseum because you haven't been to a Winterhawks game or a concert there or a graduation?
Well, it's very nice,
right? It's very nice on the inside when you go in. Is it not? Aren't the seats great?
Dude, the concourse was good.
I'm like, dude, this is awesome. We just did that, and not a peep from anybody.
Now, would I rather?
We didn't even debate it.
Yeah.
I remember asking. I talked to the Winterhawks owner at the start of the year. I'm like, where'd the money come from? I had no idea. I said, did you pay for this?
You live in Portland,
too. He said, no, the city council paid for it. I said, what?
It's a memorial there.
What?
It's not the same.
But the Moda Center.
Do they do concerts and sports at the Memorial Coliseum, or is it just like...
They do concerts
and
sports.
Thank you for your service.
Yeah. No, yeah. It's not just a memorial for people. They also hold events there, too. What a novel concept.
It's very odd.
And we paid for it. And nobody even knew we paid for it. And now this has become a political game of football.
I thought that was good stuff from Chip Alexander.
Yes, though. It was. Let's get to happier times.
Okay.
You ready for this?
Yeah, let's have the tan off at SEC Media Days.
Ooh,
Feel like your tan's going well? I feel like I'm having a good tan season. I just can't get my stomach tan.
I feel like I'm having a great tan season. Yeah. I'm really proud of my tan.
Me too.
Italy got my tan going.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah. Haven't played a ton of golf, you know.
I just played a nice course up in the DuPont, Washington area.
DuPont?
Did you play the home course?
Home course is beautiful.
What's the home course?
It's called the home course.
That's the name of the course.
No, I didn't play the home course.
It's gorgeous.
Well, then, what Eagles else? Pride.
Oh, okay. How close to Chambers is that?
Oh, it's probably 35 minutes from Chambers.
Oh, okay.
It's south.
Eagles Pride is the name of the course?
I know what you're thinking, and before you
who named that? Who came up with that name?
It's right across the street from a military base, I think it's a...
Okay.
I think that they're leaning into that.
I get it.
There's service member fees. They're different from my fees.
Okay.
Their carts are terrible, by the way, in the state of Washington. I don't know if you guys know this. They sound like gas-powered lawnmowers, and they don't stop very well, and the starting's weird.
Is it actually gas-powered, or is it electric?
It might be really gas-powered. I think our carts are infinitely better.
Those are a relic, dude. I love playing at a golf course.
Our little
course.
Electric carts are so nice.
I love playing at an old-school place, though, where you get the old gas ones.
Well,
and the click
while.
Of the pedal where you and then it gets going.
I stopped it. We almost lost it down the hill.
sounds like the old bumper cars at Oaks Park.
Yeah, dude. Those are always fun, man.
It was a good course. It was really well-maintained. The greens were in great condition, tough track. Got to be really conscious of what you're hitting off the tee box. Do not miss left or right.
That eagle had a lot of prize. Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah. I did a lot of scramble safety golf to manage my way through that course because the driver, she was not cooperating her bob.
We're going a little left, a little right, a little left, right. Yeah. We are having a tan off at SEC Media Days. We will get to that in a moment, but we need to put a bow on ACC Media Days first. So they ended last week. And they tried to 5 o'clock news dump this, or I should say he tried to 5 o'clock news dump this, because I think it happened late in the week, and it's like this kind of lingered throughout the weekend, and I thought, we can't forget this come Monday. Usually Monday's loaded. We lose sight of things. Do you know who Pat Narduzzi is?
Pittsburgh coach.
Head coach of the Pitt Panthers.
Yeah.
Before I give you some numbers, let's play what Pat Narduzzi had to say at ACC Media Day.
Coming from Michigan State, spent 8 seasons there as a defensive coordinator, coming to Pitt in 2015. I said it then, I said it now, after about 2 years in the league, I said, this conference is better. It's better than the Big Ten. It's got more skill. I just think, up and down the East Coast, I just think there's so many players in our area where in the Big Ten, trying to get players up there, to come up north, and it's, now it's got a little West flavor to it. But I've said that for years, and I'm going to stick to my guns. And you look at our record. You look at our record in bowl games against, the SEC and the Big Ten. You look at our record, in the regular season. I mean, we don't have a losing record. We have a winning record against those teams.
Pitt is 1-6 against Big Ten teams under Pat Narduzzi, including a 1-4 record in the regular season. They are 0-2 in bowl games. The last time they teed up a game, they went to the... What bowl game is this? I don't even know.
Are we really touting bowl game records?
They lost 23-17 to East Carolina. That was their last bowl game. They played East Carolina and lost 23-17. Pat Narduzzi, though, says that the ACC is better than the Big Ten.
Pat Narduzzi's wrong.
I need to put him up there with Eli Drinkwitz? Is this comment enough to get him there?
Narduzzi is interesting. He will say stuff. And you're
he absolutely will. Remember the Notre Dame game last year?
I do.
He said the game doesn't matter, and then they lost by 8,000 points. It's like, you want to take that one back, Pat?
Look, Marcus Freeman seems like such a really nice guy. If Narduzzi never says that, I think he scores half of the points they score.
Yeah, just win it like 27-0.
Hey,
like,
27-7, and you're good.
Like, game's over. We won by 20.
I think it was a mission to say, it doesn't count. Okay, great. We're going to run it up on your ass.
You're right.
Look, he's not wrong in this sense. If you get to a playoff, maybe your best represented team can certainly beat a Big Ten team. Miami is in the title game, right? Who they lose to, though, Big Ten team. It's just an easily disprovable point to say we're better and more skilled. Who's won the last three national championships?
That would be the Big Ten, Bob.
You said his record against the Big Ten is what?
1-6 against the Big Ten.
Maybe the talent is in Florida. What are we doing here?
It's so stupid.
What are you trying to accomplish? I appreciate a guy willing to bring attention to his team and the conference, even if it's a little asinine. This is just stupid. This is just dumb.
Take a shot at the Big 12. That's kind of like picking on somebody your own size. Like, hey, we're better than the Big 12. We had a team in the national championship last year.
What conference is better?
Because of Miami, I would probably say the ACC.
Okay, what conference
But I think
will be
from top to bottom, yes. I would argue the Big 12.
Yeah.
Like, I have more confidence in BYU, Utah, Arizona State, Texas Tech spending a lot of money.
Wasn't Arizona 9-3 last year?
Arizona did have a good year last year.
Back year from
they
Brennan.
Did. There's no doubt. Brennan was going to be on the hot seat. You're an idiot, Pat. Why don't you sit down and shut up? How about this one? Today, SEC Media Days began.
Yes.
And we get the opening salvo from Greg Sankey. You know, they're still threatening. We could take our ball and go do our own thing. Here is Greg Sankey on the College Football Playoff Committee.
And that's a reminder of that process needing to continually improve. So my confidence is that people will act with integrity. I do think we have questions about the understanding of the strength and rigor associated with competing in the Southeastern Conference.
It's a lot harder down here. Aren't you aware of that now? Look at our strength of schedule. We should get everybody into the playoff every year.
I don't really have much. I find him incredibly boring and thinking he runs the entire sport of college football.
He is very boring.
I did love that in the middle of everything, Michigan was like, our AD is going to step down at the end of the year. See you later.
Right in the middle of him making this Ward opening. All media members are focused on Greg Sankey, and Ward Manuel's like, peace, I'm out.
I'm actually going to run away. I'm not getting fired.
Yeah,
I love it, dude. I think, like, the SEC thing is hilarious. I think what people have pointed out, and it's very accurate, they are obviously bothered by the fact that Big Ten has won three straight national championships. And I'm kind of going into the year again wondering, you asked Bill Conley in our Football Cafe Day Dirt and Sprague segment earlier.
Yes.
You asked, would you take the Big Ten or the field to win the national championship.
So Oregon, Ohio State, Indiana, or whoever you else might think versus everybody else.
I think you can make a case that the other Power Four conferences outside of the Big Ten have just as good odds to win the title as the SEC does. Miami is going to have an S-ton of talent back.
Yep, they're one of the favorites.
And Texas Tech.
Do you think Texas Tech has a shot at doing it this year?
Why should I not?
Yeah. I mean,
they spend on the run.
They do.
Spend
they
to do. Win. Like, we would have not said, I don't think we would have in good faith said last year, I think Miami can get to the title game. I think we would have said Miami can be good. Miami might win the conference almost by default.
That's fair.
And get to the playoff. But I don't know if we would have both said, oh, yeah, I could see Miami and Mario in the title game.
Yeah.
And they did it. So
we also questioned their quarterback, too, because Beck had been kind of run out of Georgia.
So I think because of that reason, I'm going to be open-minded to teams that spend to win.
Yeah.
And you cannot argue with Texas Tech and the amount of money they have spent to win. So maybe it's Texas for you. Maybe it's Georgia. Whoever you want to pick in the SEC, I think they have just as good a chance to get the title game as the other conferences, which – that's kind of saying something, isn't it? Because I think the Big Ten is the best one at the top. I don't know about totality of conference.
Right.
But at the top of the conference, I think it's the Big Ten. And that's what we're talking about, is the best of the best. And I think you can make a case. Maybe Texas will live up to the hype with Arch. Maybe Georgia and Kirby will stop stubbing their toe at the Sugar Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, Miami, Texas Tech, like, those teams probably have, in my mind, just as good a chance to get the title game as the one you'd name in the SEC.
Well, it's funny because I disagree with the opinion, but also now as you're arguing it, I'm thinking to myself, it's not just that the Big Ten's won three national championships in a row, which they have.
Also, let me throw in Notre Dame, by the way.
Notre Dame's another one for sure.
Slash ACC.
And for a lot of people, they are the favorite this year because of what they're bringing back. But it's not just that the Big Ten's won three titles in a row. It's simultaneously what conference has not sent a national team to the national championship game in the last 3 years.
Yeah.
It's the SEC. 3 years ago, it was Michigan over Washington.
Yep.
So Big Ten, Pac-12. Mm-hmm. Then it was Ohio State, Notre Dame, Big Ten, independent. And last year, you had Indiana and Miami. And it was the Big Ten versus the ACC.
And then when the SEC's getting in, not all their teams, but like, what happens to Bama when they take on the best team in the Big Ten?
Right, they got smoked by Indiana.
Smoked.
Georgia lost to that Notre Dame team when they went. Texas would have still been in the Big 12 a couple of years ago.
Yeah, they were in the Big 12 the year that they played Washington.
And Michigan beat Alabama. So you had wins over SEC teams. Obviously, there's always going to be SEC teams in the playoffs. So I don't know if I'd agree with the point, but to your argument, they haven't sent a team to the national championship in 4 years. And so all this hype, they haven't even gone. The SEC champ the last 2 years has been Georgia, and they have not won a playoff game in the last 2 years. They've lost their first playoff game.
Their team last year in the semis was their Cinderella story where their coach ditched them.
Yes, it was Ole Miss who got all the way and came close and had a chance at the end to beat Miami, but that was the closest they came last season. So it is an interesting thought. I think I would take the Big Ten just because of the Ohio State angle. I'm obviously very confident in Oregon this year. And then just the wild card of Cignetti of like, God, can that mad scientist somehow do it again? And their non-conference schedule is so easy. So they're going to be an automatic 3-4-0 early right out of the gate before things toughen up for them. But it's a fun debate nonetheless. SEC Media Day is getting underway. We'll probably have more on that tomorrow. It's hard when it's
we'll
going on.
Audio as the,
yeah, in the middle of the show, it's a little difficult.
Well, who's tomorrow, Swag? You said today was... Stein. We still haven't got Will Stein yet.
No, Will Stein's coming later. We have Brent Venables earlier. Eli Drinkwitz I've seen at the podium. And I know Stein's coming up at 10:30.
Tomorrow, Kirby's up first at 6:45.
There we go.
Right out of the gate.
And then you have Auburn.
Okay, new coach.
Clark Lee at 10:30. Nice. And Shane Beamer with South Carolina at noon.
Shane Beamer. I can't wait to hear about how they are as talented as they've ever been and somehow also try to step away from the expectations while right. trying to maintain, don't fire me, please.
Talk about a guy who's going to get fired if the season doesn't go right. Shane Beamer, come on down.
If they're 2-2, he's gone.
And it'll lead off with the SEC coordinator of football officials.
Okay, got to have that
So if there's
guy.
Any new rules of significance or
As a Duck fan,
yeah.
I mean, maybe it's an easy question. Has Cignetti already earned scariest coach to go against in the sport for you? Coach that makes you the biggest pucker going into a game now in college football?
God, that's such a hard question to answer. As of now, yes, because it's the most recent example I have of my team getting publicly humiliated.
Beat you in the playoff game pretty bad. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah. Didn't go well. Throwing pick sixes.
You at least got Ryan Day before he bludgeoned.
We'd have beaten Ryan. We'd beat Ryan Day twice. Mario Cristobal beat Ryan Day in Columbus. Yeah, that happened.
I don't think Sark scares you.
No.
His team could be good, though.
The funny thing about it is, like, this would have been a little bit of DeBoer a couple of years ago when he was at UW. There was that bugaboo of, like, can you – and then he leaves, and it hasn't gone great for him in Alabama, so is he still scary to face? Like, that's a funny one to throw out. There is an idea of Kirby being Kirby that still would scare me, you know, crapless if we had to play them in a playoff game.
You're thinking back to that first
landing game? It's Georgia. It's Kirby. It's like we know the talent that's acquired there, and I know they're not invincible anymore because they've lost back-to-back years in the first round or their first playoff game.
Yeah.
But he certainly is in the conversation for some of those guys. What did you make of his comment? We talked to Bill Connolly, by the way, as you mentioned earlier.
Good stuff from him, man.
That the coach with the most pressure to win a national championship this year was not my guy.
Yeah.
It was not Marcus Freeman.
He's going to the same guy everybody goes to every
year. It was Steve Sarkisian in Texas. Do we agree with the – because you can make an argument for any of these guys that are on this list. My guy is certainly included in this. Is Sark the top one?
I think based on that school, the alumni base, the
– expectation.
You've got
a quarterback.
Manning as your quarterback. Like, I think Notre Dame, if Notre Dame doesn't quite get there, do they really look at things and go, what are we going to do that's any better than what we've got? They need tweaking.
They got the right guy in charge.
I think
you need to look at the landscapes of these places, right? Like, if you brought up Notre Dame, and I would laugh at the idea, right? Even if Freeman and Notre Dame lose in their first playoff game.
Right. That departure would be him going to the NFL at some
right.
point.
I think that's the separation. They're not going to overreact. And you got to ask yourself, what program has overreacted or reacted maybe properly given the history and what's happened to certain guys from that job?
Tom Herman and his
and
teacher.
Whose donor base can come up with a buyout at the drop of a hat?
It's Texas.
Yeah.
Now, DeBoer should be in this, even though they just signed him to the extension, just because the fan base will not let him hear the end of it if they have a massively disappointing season. But like, if you're actually saying it's national title and, oh my God, you didn't come close – of realistic candidates, Ryan Day is a funny one to say. It has to be Steve Sarkisian.
Yeah.
It has to be.
That's the fun part about this year is that I think you have the angle of hot seat coaches of like, God, you got to do something. Like, we need something.
That's
not a championship,
list.
But
that's
like,
a
there's
list.
A lot of guys in that list. Yeah. And then there's the idea of guys who have done stuff, but not the biggest thing. And they've been close, and their fan bases are waiting for them to do it.
Like, what two coaches, I have two in my mind when you say expectations and do something, right?
Lincoln Riley's the first one.
Well, he's a good one.
Like, you got to win 10 games
but
at
some point. I have two in my mind that I say I would be willing to bet easily they're fired more than they're saved.
Mike Norvell?
He's one. And we've named the other one already in the segment.
Shane Beamer?
Yeah. I mean, he's got the
quarterback. He brought Sellers back. He's got the receiver back.
The edge rusher. Yeah.
He's got the core back.
Come on, man. You got three spots that people covet, and it's like, when are you going to live up to it?
Look, let's continue on the college football side on the angle on the other side of this. One being a stat from our friend Phil Steele, who we had on last week to preview the season, showcasing where Oregon falls in one category. Our guy Colin Wilson is out with a projected win total for your Oregon State Beavers. What is the number from Colin Wilson? We'll get to that coming up next. Also, how do you react if you're in this fan base? We'll explain that. Get to it next on The Fan. All right, a couple of quick nuggies before I get to my Oregon and Oregon State tidbits here.
Yeah, with the Beach Boys.
First off, yeah, we were battling at the beach this weekend.
We had a battle at the beach. the day we found out about him not giving Phil Steele the depth chart.
That's right.
They were on the sand.
They showed up. Couple of quick points of contention or questions. How would you feel? Now, this is not a college angle. This is an NFL angle. Did we or did we not see the video of Cam Scataboo this weekend?
I did not.
I did not peruse
the
video.
Cam Scataboo with hair in it.
So Cam Scataboo coming off a pretty significant injury last year, right? Remember he's doing like a shoey out of his boot or whatever.
Foot pointed
the wrong direction.
Look, Dak Prescott going.
He had the foot going the wrong way. You never want that when you need your foot to play football. He was at, I don't know what he was at. If you just search his name, I saw it, the Bussin' with the Boys had it on their account. I think it was all over the place.
Yeah.
He was at some sort of, it looks like a Monster Energy convention is the best way I can explain it, but I don't know exactly what
Fanatics?
It was. It might have been the Fanatics thing.
Fanatics Fest has become.
Could have been the Fanatics thing.
I have a thing on that.
He walks out onto the stage. Yeah, we can get to that in the last segment. He walks out onto the stage, does a like Cam Scataboo, pulls up his leg so you can see the scar, like, hey, I'm all healed. Let's go, baby. And then decides to do a 360 backflip. This is on like a, it looks like a hard kind of metalish stage.
It's like a WWF stage.
He shorted it.
Yeah, and he did not land it, and he fell down backwards with an awkward landing, and he's now had to confirm to everybody that he is okay. Well, and if you're a Giants fan, are we shouting into the void? Do we just expect this?
There's a lot of teams I'm very interested to see this year play out. Giants are one of them because they got Harbaugh, and I want to see what it's like for Jackson Dart again. The one thing I don't buy about the Giants is him.
Yeah. You cannot rely on that.
I've watched football my whole life.
You cannot
this
rely on
this person
that guy.
Does not have a 12-year career,
an 8-year career. This Peyton Hill is 2.0.
I would argue worse. He actively admitted that as a child he ran into telephone poles to take contact.
He did it before the one of their games on the road at Arizona State. Remember, he was ramming his head into a concrete wall or a brick wall.
He is coming off of a severe leg injury in terms of like ending your season, but like you can recover and be fine from this. You're doing a backflip? What are we doing? Sorry, dude.
Jim Harbaugh's got to be losing his mind, right? There was a story
Jim's probably enjoying it. Good luck, John.
Jim's getting a good joke about that. There was a story that came out.
Who's got it better than us? Nobody.
I can't remember who it was in Baltimore. It might have been Joe Flacco at one point, but like there was a video of somebody on their team riding like a motorized scooter around. And John Harbaugh losing his absolute S of like, what are you doing? You cannot do that.
He was Mr. No Fun, according to the reports out of Baltimore.
And now we have Cam Scataboo shotgunning Monster Energy drinks and doing backflips on stage. Like, that's not going to fly very well.
Sniff salts or shotgun Monster Energy drinks brought to you by the Big 12. Do whatever you want to do. But like, do not be doing backflips on a stage with no padding.
Can you imagine? Would that have been? Doing? Let me ask this question.
If this was Dame Lillard?
Oh my God, we would lose our S. If he had done something to like hurt himself in that moment,
it's Martin Gramatica Gus Frat.
Is that the worst injury of all time?
No.
What's the worst?
I mean, a kicker
celebrate. At least he made the kick. It was a celebration.
But he's a kicker. We already don't think he's a football player, and then he suffers a season-ending and a career-ending injury. Basically,
who was the baseball player that went on the injured list for a sunburn because he fell asleep in the tanning bed?
That's a good question. I do not remember. Is that worse than backflip at Monster Energy Drink Convention?
No, I've been in a sunbed. You can fall asleep.
I could see how that could be very relaxing.
I want to say it was an Oriole back in the day, but I cannot remember who that was.
Yeah. I had Madison Bumgarner getting in a dirt bike accident.
The rest of the season. You had somebody cut himself.
It was Marty Cordova.
There you go.
Marty Cordova.
In 2002, while playing
for the Twins?
In California.
Oh, in the Angels.
Woke up a little
Cordova
zesty.
Cordova visited a tanning salon, fell asleep under the UV lamps, and severely burned his face and his neck. Actually, he had to miss multiple games.
He had to go on the injured list.
That's on the IR, man. I got to see him in a while.
Boy, that's a tough one. That's a tough one to say this is worse than that.
If you're a Giants fan, you're just like shouting to the sun right now. Like, what are we doing?
Well, I don't remember what year it was exactly. I remember my age. I remember being young watching it. Watching Gus Frerotte get the touchdown for Washington.
And ram his head into the wall.
And ram his head into the wall. And then instantly he suffers a massive neck injury. You're like, what?
Hunter Strickland, I think, for the Giants after giving up a bunch of home runs, punched the wall in the clubhouse and broke his hand and had to miss the rest of the year.
There was a baseball player that threw his back out sneezing.
Yes, I remember that one.
They said LeBron broke his hand in one of those Warriors finals because he punched
frustration
in a locker room.
Yeah. Like, I scored 50 and we lost the game because
like
J.R.
That,
Smith
forgot
the time on the clock.
They have Kevin Durant. Damn it.
It should have been one of the most iconic finals wins and performances of all time. But
well,
J.R.
that's
Smith
stupid.
Didn't know the time and space.
I understand in the moment the level of frustration of a highly charged type A professional athlete.
The come down hasn't happened yet.
The
you're still flowing.
Injury is what we're talking about.
Yeah.
You did this
falling asleep
in
a tanning bed.
Or a backflip at a convention.
There is a couple we're just omitting right now.
I'm sure there's some that we're forgetting that people will text in. Can I throw a random college football stat at you? This one kind of blew my mind, and then I promise I'll get to Oregon and Oregon State.
Yeah.
Ohio State, I don't follow non-Oregon recruiting very closely, but I know recruiting stuff's good. They're waiting on a kid, I think, a big commitment for a D-lineman tomorrow between Oregon and Notre Dame or something.
Four-star kid, yep.
You know, it's not worth mentioning. I'm also to a point, and I'm not a fan, so yeah, you could say that.
Okay.
It's reached a point where I'm like, yeah, is that any different than every other week?
No, not really.
Like every week, they're going to kill anybody on McAfee if they're deciding between Oregon and this school. And I'm like, it's probably going to be Oregon.
That's a fair point.
It's probably going to be Oregon.
Well, there was a kid from the state of Alabama, a high school recruit who committed to Ohio State this weekend, and it led to this incredible stat. Before Nick Saban's retirement in 2024, so that was his last year, Ohio State had only landed two players from the state of Alabama all time. Now, Alabama's a good high school, like that's a... it's not like Oregon, right, or Idaho or South Dakota.
No,
Alabama's got a lot of quality prospects.
They're in Birmingham, and
they only signed two all time after getting commitment. I think Carlos May is the name. He became Ohio State's seventh player from Alabama in the last 4 years, and then it gets worse. Are you ready for this? I can't wait to see if somebody asks Kalen DeBoer about this at SEC Media Days. This is unfathomable. As of 3 years ago, the top 15 prospects in the state of Alabama. From high school recruiting ranking from players, the top 15, you know how many of them are committed to Alabama?
One.
I'm going to say zero.
Zero. Wow. Of the top 15
He's Lincoln
players
Riley.
For 26 or 27?
For the 27 class. Because 26 guys are already, I think,
on
their
homegrown
maybe.
Yeah. Talent like that.
It's Alabama.
Crazy.
All these kids grew up, watching you win championship. Like, that's been their entire lives. They've known Alabama to be. I mean, Saban's only been gone for 2 years.
They know it's a juggernaut.
Yeah.
How many are going to Auburn?
They just won a title in 2020. Was that their last one that they won?
Like, I think you got to remember, man, they're also of the age where cable television and like sitting down all Saturday.
I know. I'm just saying, like, Alabama football in the state of Alabama should be.
Do you care if Ohio State comes in and says we give you $300,000 more? I don't think they care about that, eh?
Yeah, maybe they don't. Yeah,
by the way, got it.
I got
the winner.
What do we got?
Lionel Simmons.
The L train?
Basketball? The L train. 1991 season. Sacramento Kings missed two games because he developed tendonitis in his wrists from playing too much Game Boy.
That's right.
That's an all-timer.
That's the L-Train, the original L-Train.
That is an all-timer.
I went to high school with a kid that missed two games from tendonitis from playing pocket pool.
By the way, yes, how many of them are committed to Auburn? Of the top 15, two, three, four of them.
That hurts even worse.
That's right.
Salt in the wound.
NC State, Auburn, Miami, Texas, Ohio State, Oregon, Auburn, Miami, Arkansas, Auburn, Oklahoma, Clemson, Oklahoma.
Simmons made all rookie team and came back and played too much Game Boy.
I mean, who wasn't addicted to their Game Boy back in
the
day?
Were you that addicted?
No, not that addicted. A couple of quick tidbits on the Ducks and the Beavers. You ready for this one?
Chris Hansen, 03. Jack Del Rio brought an axe and a stump into the locker room.
That I remember.
He almost cut his own leg off.
No kidding.
Yeah, he missed the stump entirely.
Oopsies. That's a bit of a problem. Don't do that again. Homegrown talent rankings, for those of you who care, like, are you a total portal team? You know, do you develop your guys and all that? I thought this was interesting. Oregon, do you care to guess where they show up in the homegrown talent ranking, according to Phil Steele?
So these are guys that they were committed out of high school, and that's the percentage of your
so a percentage of the roster? Yes. I'm going to say it's 46%.
Okay.
I think they get a little bit
46% of the team is what you're saying?
Okay. Oh, you're looking for the ranking?
Yeah, or the percentage, either one. I have both.
I feel like you're going to get me more. But
I think they're in the top 15, maybe even the top 10 of
maybe this year's
highest
team is
percentage.
You're right, but I'm going to go 46.
That stays home.
Percentage of homegrown talent on Oregon's roster, 78.4%.
There you go.
That is 13th in the country. Now, some of these are like you got to cut like Navy and Air Force and Army are the top three because, you know. So if you take them out
have
and just
have we ever
do,
had a portal Army to Navy?
That'd actually be kind of funny if we did. Like a trade, an NIL trade.
Air Force to Navy.
So you technically move them up into the top 10 because those are obviously not going to have anybody but homegrown players at Navy and Army and Air Force.
BYU's probably up there.
BYU's not near the top of the list. I was shocked. Clemson is the most obvious. Clemson's the top non-military academy. Mm. Notre Dame is second. Georgia's in the top 10. Texas A&M. So there's, you know, some interesting ones in here that made me look. And then your projected win total, according to our good buddy, Colin Wilson.
Yeah.
Ready for this?
Mm-hmm.
Projected win total for Oregon State this year? 4.
Boy, that's exactly what Phil predicted.
That's what Phil said.
Seems to be the trendy pick. He said, offensive style, you have to match the skills of a quarterback. Malik Murphy returns 1,800 yards. It only included 9 touchdowns to 8 picks, though, and he posted twice as many turnover-worthy throws as big-time throws in 2025. Also, returning offensive line snaps for Oregon State ranks 115th in FBS. So you're replacing an offensive line, and you projected to win 4 games this year.
Tell you right now, I got a 3-win bet with Leverett here in the building.
That it'll be over 3?
He thinks
under 3?
Yeah.
Oh, that would be bad.
I think we're doing 3.5.
He 3.5 is a
split.
3,
and I think they're going to win more than 3.
Okay, that's fair. 3.5.
If they hit the over by getting to 4.
That's not a good feeling over.
You doubled
you
it.
Technically
you technically
did.
Double your win total.
But.
We talked about that Friday. Yeah. It's all in how it looks.
Yep, no doubt about it. What is with this latest controversy? A little bit of audio we haven't gotten to yet, and we'll get you set for your Monday in sports. Close it up next on The Fan. What is this? Sounds like a theme song from a movie from 1987.
Dookie Hauser? Doogie Howser?
Welcome back in, everybody.
Doogie with a G.
Doogie.
Not Doogie.
Dookie. Doogie.
Dookie.
Doogie.
Doogie in the pool.
You ever give a nickname to somebody and you never want to change their, like, that's their name? I gave my brother a nickname years ago. He was working a second job to just make extra money. He was doing pizza deliveries on the side.
There you go. Pizza boy.
And I called him the Pineapple Prince.
The Pineapple Prince?
And it's just in my phone forever.
It'll always be that.
It'll
for
never
you.
Not
delivering
be.
A lot of Hawaiian
Does
pizzas,
anybody
huh?
else yeah. call him the Pineapple Prince or
no.
only you?
No, it'd be me because he would call me during like in between deliveries.
Right. It's
and
Pineapple
we would
Prince.
Talk on a dog walk. And I'm like, what are you doing? He's like, singing these pies. Like, told me how many people would order pineapple on pizza. I go, yeah, because it's actually good. We just do this fake outrage thing. Like, we don't like it. So I put his name as the Pineapple Prince.
The Pineapple Prince. That's a good nickname. I like that.
It's hard to overcome a great nickname.
Yes. When you name somebody, even if it's just between the two of you, is an inside joke.
Yeah.
I'm with you there.
Slim Reaper. Come on, Kevin Durant.
Yeah, don't lean away.
Well, sometimes, I gave my niece and nephew, my oldest nieces and nephews, their other uncle has the same name as me. So when they were really young, I didn't want to be caught up in the Brandon and then like me, him, me. So I just jokingly said, you can call me B-Nut. Well, that has somehow morphed for my sister-in-law to just call me Nutface.
Okay.
You know what I don't fight? I don't fight it.
No.
I am who I am, man. I'm Nutface.
Does it ever come out in public?
Harsh.
Is it used in like a public setting?
Yeah. They call me the nickname.
Sure.
They use the nickname that I just threw
like
in. Like,
a
you
waiter,
call me that.
Waiter walking by the table hearing that. Hey, Nutface, pass the coffee. What did she just call
Nutface, not the greatest nickname in the world.
I'm not mad about it, though.
Especially when, how'd you get that nickname?
Well, you know.
I
we
to
need to go dirt Nutface now?
you...
You brought that up.
Yeah, I know. Man. I did. Say, like, start naming the show Dirt and Nutface.
Dirt and Nutface. That's
I
not
already
bad.
Get it enough with Soy Boy. My oldest daughter calls me that because she saw a YouTube comment once.
And somebody called you a Soy Boy.
So I'll do something or not do something. She go, okay, Soy Boy.
Okay, yeah. What are we having a meatless dinner tonight? You Soy Boy.
God. Damn it.
Go charge your car, you Nancy.
I am charging my car.
As we speak.
Is there a spot for you this morning?
Yeah,
there you go.
Man. I needed it.
I just realized I logged out of my computer, so can one of you two fine gentlemen help me out here?
Yeah,
what do you need?
I thought this was the highlight of the week. Look, Ryan Fox winning was great for me as a golf guy because I've known him, and I love how quickly he plays. He's got a great personality. So, like, as an inside golf guy, it was fun to watch him come out of nowhere, shoot a 62, right? Mm-hmm. 62, I think, on Saturday.
Saturday, and then
hold on and make a big birdie on 18. Like, that was really fun.
I love the fact that he had to empty out the red wine from the claret jug.
Dude, he already put it in.
Before he went out and did interviews.
He already poured a whole bottle of red wine into the claret jug, and they were like, dude, you got to come back out and do interviews. And he was like, ah, damn it. He had to dump it all out and go back out. And so that was hilarious. But I think probably
you just drink it on television.
I would have advised him to. Just start sipping out of it.
He was not hiding the fact there was a party that was going to happen.
He had an early morning flight and he was open of like,
nope,
I don't know.
I'm going to have a hangover
tomorrow.
He ended
up making it to his credit. He ended up making it to the flight, but he was at least acknowledging like, there's a good chance I'm not going to make it tomorrow. But I thought the most notable thing from the weekend ended up being maybe a golf beef that could be coming to the PGA Tour near you. And an honest assessment from Rory McIlroy on Bryson DeChambeau.
Late night for everyone.
Yeah.
I won't pretend to be up here and defend Bryson. I'm not particularly fond of him. I think a lot of it's performative. I think a lot of it's for attention. And to hold the tournament hostage like that and have all of us, volunteers, players, everyone waiting on him to depart, I didn't feel like it was a great look.
Do you think you knew what he was doing?
Look, he's going to say, like, again, I'm not in his mind, I'm not in his, it, but it didn't look good.
Roy, is something like that, you think that happens out here more than we know and it just isn't viewed or seen?
Yeah, it's hard, right? Look, he's every shot is on camera. There's a lot of guys that play this week and the shots aren't on camera. So you can say that that's unfair or whatever, or it might happen more than it does, but it's obviously impossible to police everyone, and that's why it is for the most part, a self-policing game. But I think when there is obvious evidence like there was last night, then obviously that's a different story.
I just to hear somebody be that blunt with their assessment of their personal opinion of another, like we had the Brooks and Bryson thing. Remember when he'd kind of roll
it? They hated
each other, and then they wouldn't. But then neither of them ever really said anything publicly. It was more of like an eye roll when the other one would walk by. That was pretty refreshing for me to hear. I'm not the biggest doucher guy. You know that. I think Rory's assessment is pretty spot on. A lot of this is for attention, and it is performative. Mm-hmm. And he certainly was playing into that, knowing the cameras were following him around on Friday night. But we all know Liv's going to fold. We don't know if Bryson's going to become a YouTube golf star or come back to the PGA Tour or attempt to come back to the PGA Tour. It certainly spices things up, and the need for villains and rivalries is great in golf. And this one's been a solid one of U.S. Open and Pinehurst a couple years ago, Bryson wins. Final group of the Masters, Rory wins. Now you have this back and forth and hopefully more to come down the road.
In America, who is more beloved, Bryson or Rory?
Rory.
All right.
Maybe I'm wrong on that because of the YouTube
following.
So a
Bryson Rory final round at the Masters. You got to take Ireland out of this, right?
Yes, this happened 2 years ago. I felt like more people were rooting for Rory, but maybe I'm wrong there.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm wrong. I'm also in a Rory bubble.
The thing for Bryson is obviously broken through in a big way.
I think there's different silos of fans almost because I think a lot of YouTube golf fans aren't necessarily the biggest watchers of golf. And I know that's doesn't make a lot of sense,
no,
but my point
that's
being,
accurate.
Like legitimate golf tournaments, I think they just prefer the fun, scramble nature of that's the golf that I watch.
My nephew will watch more Grant Horvat than he will any single PGA or major championship event.
So if I'm using the crowd at a golf tournament, I'm not saying none of them watch YouTube golf, but I think it's a much more purist crowd, if you will, and that crowd would tend to lean more Rory than
Bryson. Okay, so it's maybe in this instance it's a time and place. Maybe Augusta, it's Rory. Waste management?
Yeah, could be. U.S. Open to this point, I mean, to that point at the U.S. Open, it was very, I don't know if it was pro Bryson, but it was when he won, it was a very big deal. Yeah.
It's interesting. He has these shenanigans. Look, you can disagree with, and I have this opinion. I just think waiting as long as they did to tell him about it, I wish in real time we could just know that, hey, that was a penalty.
Hey, you stomped on a bush behind your ball. You don't need to, there's nothing in the rule book that says you can go stand behind your ball wherever and you're out on the course.
He certainly reacted the worst possible way. He was very animated, and then he does the threat, I don't know if I'm going to play tomorrow anymore.
And then threatens to call the president, and he threw a temper tantrum baby.
Absolutely. He's a whiny little bee. That I don't like that. I also thought it took something away from the tournament, them doing it after he walked off with the birdie.
Yeah.
And all the moment, and now you're making the attention about the tournament that
I was captivated by. I was Teddy was taking a nap. It wrapped up, and I'm watching air. Is this happening right now?
I couldn't believe. I thought my TV was delayed. I'm like, I already watched him hit out of this.
I thought he was, and then they're going back, and they're like, you know, he's jumping in a cart with
he
an official, and you're like,
screaming at someone.
What is happening? They just had a live feed on it for 30 straight minutes. It was pretty captivating.
Well, the other piece of the puzzle is going back to you. There should be rules officials that go with every group that goes out. And they should have the ability. I don't know what why is there so much discussion?
Yes.
Why is there so much gray area, you know?
There should be a back and forth from players and the official.
I will get player input.
Hey,
what did you tell me what you did?
Before you walk in here, make sure you're careful of where you're stepping
exactly.
And that you're not doing anything to impact where your swing path is.
But at some point, a rules official makes a call and there's a thing and everybody moves on. You can like it or, I mean, every other sport, everybody bitches
exactly.
about it. But at some point, the call is the call and you play on.
So when he went in there, I mean, you guys refreshed my memory on this because I saw it, but when he went in there, there's nobody standing around saying,
I was literally watching in the studio during a commercial and made a comment about don't cheat because it looked like he was stomping down the stuff behind the ball.
But how is there not one
somebody
person
there? Yeah, it's a totally fair
dude,
point.
You can't do this.
That's
it'll
totally
be a two-stroke.
Totally fair point. Last bit in my notes today, how impressed are we with Josh Kerr breaking the mile record? You see that from the weekend?
Didn't we had a mile break?
Dude, a Scottish runner, Josh Kerr,
like 342
broke the
mile
world record, 342 and 666 tenths of a second. Average speed of 16.2 miles per hour.
Just I'm throwing up at the idea of having to run that fast. That
I'd now love to play the fun game of how long could I run at six? Like,
could you
20 yards?
Could you beat the double up of?
Can
that
I even
time?
Get to 16 miles an hour?
No. Here's the follow-up. So 342?
Yeah.
What would that be twice? Seven something?
Yeah.
Could you beat the double up of his time?
No, I don't think I could. Pass out if I did. That'll do it for us, folks. If you missed the show, go check the podcast. Bill Connolly was great talking football and football. And then our guy Chip Alexander from
Fantastic.
Raleigh, a good insight on the arena negotiation down there and how it went. And now the Hurricanes are renovating their arena. So a happy outcome. Hopefully we have the same as well. Thanks for being a part of our Monday, everybody. We'll talk to you tomorrow at 6 a.m. The Firm, Harrison Moring, is next. Listen to 105.1 FM The Fan.